Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the Accomplish Radio Morning Show. I'm your host, Darlene Willman. I'm the publisher of Accomplish Magazine, and really excited to bring to you today a fabulous guest that I want to interview, and I've been looking forward to this interview actually for quite some time. And before I actually bring him on the air with us, just want to cover a couple of quick things. We are really excited about our next issue that will be coming out very soon. We're going to have David Allen on the front cover. He was wonderful to have on our show. And if you're looking to find us, just go to AccomplishMagazine.com. And in fact, you know what? We're really glad you tuned in today for the Accomplish Radio Show. You know, we're celebrating actually 16,000 listeners who've tuned into our show each weekday morning that broadcasts at 10 a.m. Central, which is 11 Eastern and 8 Pacific. And if you've missed today's show, it actually rebroadcasts all day at AccomplishMagazine.com. And it's also available in iTunes. So you can download this and take it with you and keep hearing all the great things that you'll be discovering in this interview today. Also, we're coming up on a big celebration with our 100th show that's going to be broadcasting next week. I can't believe it's going to be here so quick. You know, we're also growing at such a fast pace here at Accomplish Magazine and Radio, and we've recently launched a brand new Facebook fan page. I'm sure our guest is going to be excited about that since he does so much on the internet. And you can find us at facebook.com/AccomplishMag, and just definitely join us. And, you know, we want to hear all about your accomplishments, the things that you're doing out there that make a difference in the world and, you know, that you just want to share with other people, because we're really excited about all the great accomplishments that people are experiencing. And if you've been listening to our show on a regular basis, I usually bring someone on that has accomplished a lot of great things or that has great words of wisdom to share about all their wonderful accomplishments. And today's guest is Alex Mendozian. He's from sunny California, and he teaches productivity strategies to work-at-home entrepreneurs who strive to get more done faster, better, and with less effort. And since 1991, he has generated over, all right, get this, $233 million in sales for his clients and partners via electronic marketing, such as teleseminars and radio, TV, and the internet. He's definitely somebody who believes in, you know, the power and the leverage of using the internet. He's definitely, I'm definitely one of his biggest fans, because that's something that I look at using myself. But Alex has personally consulted with Dale Carnegie Training, NYU, OneShoppingCart.com Corporation, Mutuals.com, Trim Spa, and Sam's Club, and so many other places. You know, he's hosted teleseminars with some of the world's top thought leaders, such as Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield, Stephen Covey, Les Brown, Harv Eker, Donald Trump. Wow, that's I didn't know about Donald Trump, but that's awesome. I can't believe that. And so many other great people, Brian Tracy and Harvey McKay. You know, he has really connected with some of the definitely the world's best that most of the people tuning in for Accomplish Magazine Radio are drawn to a lot of these folks. So that's he's also the CEO of Heritage House Publishing. It's a electronic marketing boutique. I like how he uses the word boutique. It's very nice. And he basically helps companies repurpose the written and spoken educational content for worldwide distribution. And, you know, he's trained over 14,000 teleseminars since 2002. And claims that practically any entrepreneur can transform their annual income into a weekly income once they apply his principle-centered electronic marketing strategies. Well, without I could go on and on about Alex, but I'd like to go ahead and welcome Alex Mendozian to our show today.
Thank you, Darlene.
Oh, so glad you're here.
I am too.
Wow. What a treat to have you as a guest on our show today.
Well, the biggest challenge was getting my kids off to school because it's my wife's birthday, so she got breakfast in bed, and I had a sleepover with my son with one of his friends. So I used to play man on man with my kids. Now there's three kids and two parents, and one was in bed eating breakfast. So that was the biggest challenge. This is going to be a snap for me.
Oh, wonderful. Really, I'm so glad you took time out of your schedule, and to be there with your family is just so special. And, you know, I love that about you because, you know, I'm also an entrepreneur. I'm celebrating 8 years in business. Yay.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and, you know, just a lot of fun things have been happening. But I love your values of keeping it tight with your family and how you're just there and they're your number one, you know, commitment. You know, you and I actually met it's been over a year ago at CEO Space in Las Vegas. I think it might have been class 1209.
Where I was speaking, or was I there as a guest?
Actually, I think I saw you as a guest the first time.
Right.
And saw you as a speaker the next. And, you know, I have to tell you, I was really inspired by you.
Thank you.
And I just truly admire all your accomplishments. And, you know, going from earning your annual salary into, you know, what, a weekly salary, and you've probably done it to a day now, or an hour.
It's an hour. I did it in 20 minutes last year. The amount was $63,700. That's what I earned in 2001 because I went from corporate America, Madison Avenue, of $300,000. That took me 8 years to reach down to $63,000 because I was on my own, and my wife and I were still spending at the $300,000 level. So that was scary, but within 3 years, actually 23 months, and I'll tell the story if you want later, that turned into a monthly income, and then 2 years later, I did it in less than an hour, and that was such a cause for celebration. So it's just doing little things, ordinary things, consistently, and making micro decisions and being productive day in and day out. I heard you talk about David Allen, who's a close friend of mine. I am what David Allen does to corporate communities and affinity groups and corporations and executives. What David Allen is to them, I'm mostly to the work-at-home entrepreneur who's typically...
Oh, my gosh.
What
are the odds that I get both of you on my show within
perfect.
The same month for productivity?
Yeah.
This is fabulous.
Yeah, it's perfect. I mean, you say you're passionate about supporting entrepreneurs, executives, and other CEOs. Well, I have a CEO here at home, and it's not me. It's my wife, Amy. But then there's also the CEO, me, who is working from home and reaching out really all over the world. So I think the work-at-home entrepreneur is not just what's happened in the past, but it is the future. And Faith Popcorn talked about it in one of her first books, and she called it cocooning. And I mean, that's what we do every single day here. So hopefully we can talk about those things.
It's a different lifestyle for sure. And I'm looking forward to hearing your, you know, you did such an incredible presentation. I really have to tell you, I was really, you know, I like hung on your every word going, wow,
thank
this guy's
you.
Brilliant. I really enjoyed it. And I kept on going, you know, I can't wait to ask you just some of your own personal productivity styles.
Sure.
You know, and let's talk about, first of all, when you decided to become an entrepreneur, because at some point in time, you know, that switch happened, or maybe you thought you were going to do this your whole life?
Well, I think when I came out of the womb and they cut the umbilical cord, I would have told the doctor to not slap my back if I could. So I was unemployable from the moment I came out of my mom. I could tell you, you know, flat out. It was about a foot that I traveled, just like my son did and my daughter did and probably like you did and everyone else. It's all of about, you know, 12 to 16 inches. But, man, what a journey that is, you know. And having seen childbirth, I'm grateful that I'm a man, that I don't have to, you know, endure that. Because it's just exhausting watching it. My son was in, had my wife Amy in labor for about 16 hours. But I think since birth, I've been an entrepreneur. I know I was unemployable at age 4. I could remember back when I did not want to get paid an allowance. I'd rather make more money and put out lemonade stands. And then I had like a chain of lemonade stands on our street. And then I did the same thing with gardening, and I had other kids. I'd go get the accounts, and like at age 11, the kids would be, you know, doing the gardening work, and I didn't want to garden, but, you know, they
did. So you were delegating.
Yeah. And then I would call, like, I remember there was a Mrs. Williams down the street on Oaknall Avenue in Pasadena, and I called her up, and I tried to steal my business from me, and I said, you know, you open, I'm a kid from another block, can we take over your business? She says, yeah, you know, they've been really sloppy lately. And I go, what? So then I fired that kid and put another kid there. And so I was doing reconnaissance and research at age 11, and then I turned to athletics, and I was a professional athlete for about 10 years. I was a cyclist, never world class, but, you know, national class. And so I took a hiatus from business, and then I came back into business. The concept was still the same. It was to accomplish beyond my potential. And so I'm delighted to be here because what you stand for is also what I live into daily.
Absolutely. You know, it was no surprise that I went, you know, I was thinking about that, about who I wanted to bring on our show, and it just, you kept coming back into my mind and, you know, coordinating with your schedule and our show, and I go, I just can't wait that we can finally, you know, get in sync and spend some time together. And, you know, let's get right into it because we only have an hour together, and
okay.
I have this feeling that I'm going to have to invite you back on my show again when we go into other great topic. So, but today is all about the productivity style for entrepreneurs. And, you know, what do you think the principle of productivity is so critical for, you know, entrepreneurs right now?
Well, the big reason is why. Why is this principle out? Well, I can tell you what the definition of productivity is in my experience, but why is it first so critical to an entrepreneur? Let's first define an entrepreneur. An entrepreneur isn't someone who makes money. An entrepreneur isn't someone who is in there doing it for a profit. My wife is an entrepreneur, and she is a stay-at-home mom that is not home often because she is a part-time cab driver for my kids. Then there's me. I'm the entrepreneur.
That.
Yeah, she is. But she's an entrepreneur. I'm an entrepreneur because I'm building value for, now I have over now a quarter million students in the world, and I get to them via the telephone, via webcast, through a streaming video, you know, whatever forms now that the internet has expanded. So the definition of entrepreneurship is simply to undertake something. Entreprendre, it was a term coined by Jean-Baptiste Say. He was a Frenchman. I think he was an economist of some sort. And it started in France and made it over to the English Channel. And entrepreneurship in the industrial age really took off. But not for the factory workers in Great Britain, for the for the owners of those factories. So that's not really entrepreneurship. Now, during the 17th century, of course, or 18th century, we had all the folks coming over from Britain, and they became founding fathers. And again, they undertake the challenge of coming to the colonies. And Abraham Lincoln, Benjamin Franklin, way before Abraham Lincoln, he was an entrepreneur. In fact, he's America's first millionaire, Benjamin Franklin was. Then you have Thomas Jefferson and George Washington. These guys were entrepreneurs. In fact, because they had farms, Senate was in session one-third of the year, nowhere near like it's not like now. And they weren't politicians. They were entrepreneurs. And then another wave came in the 1800s. Those were the immigrants coming through Ellis Island. With the Statue of Liberty. Can you see her in your mind's eye? As they're coming through, and then they flooded into the U.S. And then we sold out. With Alfred Sloan and General Motors, really that was the beginning of industrial socialism in a way, because what happened is the entrepreneurship that came from the Third World and from outside the U.S. gave in to industry, and then the employee was born. And then you go into the 30s, 40s, 50s,
wow.
60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, what do we have? Disaster, Enron, Arthur Anderson, WorldCom, not to mention in the 21st century, Bernie Madoff. Too much power. Because if there's only one person undertaking something, then there could be a struggle. But when you have a bunch of people doing that, then that's the entrepreneurship that I'm talking about. So for me, entrepreneurship is a source of liberation, but it is not just making money. It's undertaking any activity to reach a higher level of productivity. So why is the principle of productivity so critical for entrepreneurs? Because it makes the economy flow. It circulates money, and these small businesses, under $100,000 a year or $100,000 to $500,000 a year, that is what the essence and the core of an economy is. And so because of, there's so much social media and so many distractions these days, entrepreneurship is more and more difficult. You're in business 8 years. That's a miracle. Most entrepreneurial businesses are out of business. 90% are out of business by the fifth year.
There were times, I'll tell you, Alex.
because you're an entrepreneur.
Go hang it up and go get a job, but I'm unemployable too. I know that.
that's the difference. You are an entrepreneur. Now, many people think, okay, what do I need to do to become an entrepreneur? No, that's the wrong question. Who do I need to become? To become an entrepreneur. Well, that's the key. It's the who. Who do you need to become? A much better question than that is, what community do I need to belong to maintain my entrepreneurship? And, of course, the magazine that you have and the radio show you have is one of those communities, and that's why I'm here. You know, Accomplish Magazine is a community, your source for endless possibilities. I bet you were thinking by year five, I'm out of here. And then you woke up, you said, no way.
I love it.
So that's why
the people that are drawn to Accomplish Magazine really are those individuals that, you know, are seeking new things in their life, and that, you know, it's definitely those overachievers, but yet they want to do it in a smart, intelligent way. So they're looking for information, you know.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to have that. And thank you for recognizing that as a community, because it is. We've actually been picked up in over 12 countries already. I'm shocked. I can't get over that. But
well, you're in the Show Me State, right?
Yes, I am. St.
Yeah.
Louis.
Okay, yeah. So that's why I'm really careful with what I say here. I know better.
This is awesome. You know, I can't get over how much that your mentality, your values, your focus, your everything that you have resonates so much with me and probably a lot of the friends in my circle, in my network. But, you know, you're one of those people that looks at, okay, how can we maximize, you know, what's happening and leverage? So I know you do a lot of things, productivity style things that enhance performance for an entrepreneur. So, what would some of those things look like to you?
Well, I mean, the definition of productivity for me is five words: maximum results in minimum time. If you have a pen, if you're listening right now, or if you're reading this in some other form, I would write that down or at least highlight it and listen to what I'm saying. Maximum results. A result is a result. It's something that you can measure. Maximum results in minimum time. That's what the definition of productivity is. Now, that's nowhere near as powerful as leverage, which is another word you use. Leverage is maximum productivity, which again is maximum results in minimum time. Maximum productivity, this is the definition of leverage, with minimum effort. Maximum productivity with minimum effort. So leverage, after you're productive, now you want to leverage that, and that's leverage as a verb. And that's where you have the maximum results in minimum time done with minimum effort. Initially, you're overworked and underpaid as an entrepreneur. And then you hit an inflection point. Andy Grove used to talk about this concept of an inflection point. And he was an entrepreneur, but he was here in Silicon Valley, you know, running this little company making microchips. And what ended up happening is after this inflection point happens, you are underworked and overpaid. Underworked and overpaid. So I'm in an interview right now, and if yesterday was anything like it's going to be today, in the 19 minutes we've been on this interview and in the 16 minutes I've been speaking, I've already generated somewhere out there in the world automatically, effortlessly, without me paying attention to it. I get to count it, but I'm not paying attention to it. I've already generated about $2,000. Now, that's insane.
That is insane.
That's insane. And part of the reason is
you're my hero.
Well, I'm my wife's hero too. But the thing is, the reason it's happening is there's a campaign happening. So it's a little bit more. Typically, it would be maybe 1/10 that amount. But think about that blessing and think about the sleepless nights. Were they worth it? Yes, they were. So the definition of productivity, maximum results in minimum time. The definition of leverage, maximum productivity with minimum effort. That leads us to all the different areas of performance that we can enhance. And these areas of performance are looking at how can we become more productive. And so I want to focus on six areas, if that's okay. And the number one area that's important is email. The second is meetings, you know, interactive meetings. Three is projects. Four is phone calls that you make. I mean, talk about a time-sapping activity that can be, especially if you're calling a family member or, worse, a friend who's an energy vampire. Phone calls, it can just sap you dry. And then outsourcing. You know, how can you become more productive with outsourcing? If we have time, we'll talk about interviews as well. So, you know, email, meetings, projects, phone calls, outsourcing, I can show you how to become more productive with all of those. So let me just turn it over, you know, back to you. In looking at email, if you were to think about, okay, well, I spend, my name is Darlene, and I spend, I'm a recovering emailaholic, okay? Let's assume this is like a 12-step visual we're doing, and we're going to get over things. How often do you check email every single day, Darlene?
Myself, I probably do probably 6-7 times a day, maybe.
6-7. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And do you have a little sound attached to your email when it comes in?
Nope.
Okay,
I disabled
perfect.
That.
Excellent. Well, good job. You're on your way to recovery.
And I stop the whole send and receive thing automatically, too.
Okay. So then you check it and you click receive and then you take that in, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Now, that's perfect. And you do it about 7 times a day, 6-7 times a day?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. And when you're working on a project and you're writing something and you're kind of in the zone, in flow, when you get writer's block or you get stuck, do you check email just kind of to pass the time or think that you'll get unstuck? Do you ever do that? Have you ever done that?
Oh, yeah, I've done that on occasion, yeah.
Perfect.
I try not to, but I have.
Right, exactly. Okay, perfect. Now, what you're describing is the normal email behavior. Your emails, the typical email that comes into you, how many emails do you think you get a day, ballpark?
Oh, boy. You know, since I manage 3 different companies, so there's people wanting information in all 3 areas, so there's a few hundred each day.
I'd say a few hundred. So is that over 200, 300? Whereabouts, 200 to 300?
It's between probably 200 and 300, I guess.
200 to 300. Do you get to all of them?
Oh, God, no.
No, you don't. Okay. Do you feel a little unsettled, or is there any not enough?
I'm already having shortness of breath.
Okay. I mean, does it bother you, the fact that you don't get to all of them?
Yes.
Yeah. It bothers a lot of people. So would you like to learn how to minimize the time so you check email twice a day, not 7, and you get less than 15 emails a day, and mm-hmm. all of them are handled, and you have what David Allen calls a zero base. In other words, there's nothing in the inbox. Now, you probably, if you open up your inbox, you probably have maybe over 1,000 emails there, or even if you file them, you may have a couple hundred. How many do you have?
Do you really want to know?
Yeah, I do.
Okay,
you know
so
why?
I keep everything.
I keep in your inbox.
Yeah.
See, we're going to call the elephant in the room because that's the first step to healing.
You're calling
this is
me
healing
out on my stuff here.
No, I'm not. I'm not. No, this is because you're going to overcome this. So
this
do you think
great.
You have a couple thousand?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. There's over 9,000 sitting
9,000. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. That is perfect because that's exactly where I'd love for you to be, because this is going to be for you as much as your listeners. Now, the reason I'm doing this way, and thank you for playing with me, is because this is a coaching. It's kind of solicited, but you're allowing me to do it. May I continue?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Because it's much more interesting doing it this way. Because if you can heal, and that's a word I don't take lightly, this is a healing. Okay? There's a wound in us, and you don't have to have a disease to have a wound. There's a wound that's not healed in that this is what we're doing with email. When something was supposed to make our life easier, it makes it less productive. And it gets steeped into every other part of our life, like a tea bag in water, hot water. So 9,000 emails in an inbox. That's great. Okay, I have right now, I'm really bad today. I have about 14 in the inbox. Typically, it's 0. Now, congratulations, Alex. Big
deal.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Right? I'm like, oh, my gosh.
No, but see, it's like big deal. So what? What's the big deal? The big deal is less stress. The big deal is I don't have people or relatives calling, did you get it? Did you get it? Did you get it? I don't have people asking me, how come you didn't respond to me? I don't have joint venture partners saying, you know what? You didn't support me on that. I'm so upset with you. You know why I didn't support you? Because I didn't see it. It's in a pool of nine, in an ocean of 9,000 emails, right? So here's how we're going to do. We're going to do email recovery. How do you become more productive with this very routine and mundane activity of email? Are you ready, Darlene? Yes or yes?
I'm like on the edge of my seat.
Okay. Now, it's going to take courage. It is going to take courage, and courage is a door that you open from the inside. So are you open to that?
I am.
Okay, good.
As long as you don't make me hit delete on everything, I'm good.
Well, hang on. I haven't even begun yet.
You're
going to take courage. Okay. So first of all, no one would have crossed the ocean if they could have gotten off the ship in the middle of the storm, okay? No one. So
okay.
The reason someone crossed the ocean, especially the founding fathers, is in a storm they kept going. So even if you're in a storm, keep going. You're in your eighth year. You're in the one half of 1% of entrepreneurs. So the reason I'm not calling Darlene out, I'm celebrating her, because she is willing to call the elephant in the room, in this case in her inbox. So there are over 9,000 people in the inbox, and probably some people are wondering why she hasn't got back to them. And there's probably 9,000 things that don't have to get done. Some more questions in the diagnosis, and then we'll begin.
Okay.
When you write an email, have you ever written an email that has more than one thought or more than one request? In other words, you've made 3 or 4 points. Have you ever done that?
Sure.
Thank you. And when people write to you, do they do that?
Yes.
Yes. How do you file an email that has more than one request? Because if you haven't done all 3 requests or 4 requests or 10 requests, it still stays in your inbox. So train the people who are emailing you by creating an email that has that only has one request. That's it. One request. It's like a Western Union telegram. One request. One thought, one request. So, for example, Darlene, what is the dial-in number for this show? That's an email.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
End of story. Now, if I wanted to ask for another topic, then I'd say, okay, would you like to get the questions from me for tomorrow's show? That's another request. That's one request. So let's get this sunk in like mortar to a brick wall. Mortar's the key. It keeps the bricks together. They don't call it a mortar wall. They call it a brick wall, but it's the mortar that puts the bricks together. How many requests per email are you going to just think about doing? You can't promise me that you're going to do it because you're in the habit of doing more than one. But how many requests would I recommend you to make per email?
One.
And a request. Don't just
okay,
don't
so
email
my contributing
someone.
Marketing, my authors are all going to freak out because there's like a ton of requests in the last email I just sent out.
Oh, sure. And, you know, there's some exceptions. There's some because when you're talking to a lot of people, like with my friend Harv Ecker, we get together once a week, so we put a bunch of requests in one email so we can talk about it at the meeting. But you got to train people to make one request. And a request, you don't have to email back and say thank you. What do you have to do that for? It's crazy. Just tell people, hey, look, I'm grateful. I'm not going to email you back. Why send another email for no reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one request, and then here's the kicker, and then we'll get straight into the solution. And we're going to spend the most time on email, so the other 5 will be a cakewalk. As far as writing the length of an email, okay, do you ever write emails that are less than 50 words?
No.
Thank you. I'm so grateful for your honesty. So if you have more than 50 words, you can make an attachment because it's a lot easier to print. But if you ever try to print email, it's not very fun to read. And then when you're emailing, final thing, the width of the words, you know, like you go A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K. If you just like were to put, you know, 26 letters across, are you with me? 26
mm-hmm.
letters, A, B, C, D, all the way to Z, okay? That width of, you know, the email going out before you do a what would be called a hard return or an enter. So A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. That's the width to work with email. 26 characters. Now, that's the width I put at the very top, just kind of as a reference. And then anytime I hit that width, then I press enter and it goes back again. I press enter and it goes back again. And I make sure I erase or delete that top, you know, A, B, C, D to Z, because that is easier to read than going all the way to the right and then making, you know, the word processor be the thing that is causing it to return, because it looks crazy and it's too wide. You want to make it like a magazine print or newspaper print.
You know, I noticed that actually when you sent over your email, I actually picked up on that. Went, huh? It's all, you know.
Wasn't it easier to read?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So what you want is maximum results in minimum time. In minimum what, please? What's the word?
Time.
Time. Thank you. And so you want to make it 50 words or less. The width is narrow, about 26 characters. And if you want a reference, just put the alphabet out and use that as your guide. And one thought, one request, and make them request-based and not just, hey, how's it going? Oh, thank you. Great. Hey, I love you. I love you, too. No, I love you more. Okay. I can't believe some of the stuff that goes on. So that's, of course, we're talking entrepreneur, you know, and business email. So I have less than 15 emails in my inbox right now. Shame on me. I have a bunch of folders that I put emails into, and I also spend about an hour a day writing and receiving email, an hour a day, which is a lot of time, actually 50 minutes. So here's what I do. First thing is I train my people that I'm emailing to that the emails are one request and 50 words or less. And they don't like that initially. But, you know, as long as you keep doing it back to them, they'll get it because they'll feel kind of odd giving you this treatise of information. The second thing is the width. Make sure that when you're writing, they get the model, the width that you're writing. And if they write a long email, long, the easiest way to get them recovered into writing better email is just put a very brief message like, got it, or okay, or great. And then they send another long email, okay, like my sister, okay? I say, great, wonderful, remarkable, wonderful, nice, okay? Very short, terse response because they're going to – what they're doing is, pardon the expression, they are vomiting with digital lettering on you with all of this stuff that's unnecessary that they can do on the phone. And you just – you give them back like a little hors d'oeuvre and you go, okay.
That's perfect. I really like. That's why I like Twitter, you know, because it is. It's short. It's sweet. It's to the point.
Yeah, and that's characters. Imagine if if Twitter were an email. I mean, I wish I'm going to do an email program that won't allow any more than 500 characters, which is about, I'm going to say, 150 words, maybe, right? So
it's amazing how much you can communicate in just that little bit.
Well, guess what? You'll be a better communicator too. You'll be a much better communicator if you can do it in less time. So with email, the first thing that I recommend is keep them to 50 words or less. That's step number one, 50 words or less. How many words, please?
50 words or less.
Thank you. And the second thing is keep the width narrow so it's very readable, not legible, readable. The readability of it is good. Less than 26 characters, which is the American alphabet, English alphabet anyway. And, well, what's 26 characters, Alex? Well, just type in A, B, C, D, E, F, G, or why don't you just type in, you know, A, 26 times, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or W, 26 times, and then that becomes your width. And then here's the kicker. Check email at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day, or like I do, almost at the beginning of the day and in the middle of the day. So I check email at 9. So after this interview is over, I'm checking it at 9. Now, let's say I have someone just begging to talk to me at 8 o'clock, and it's right now. If I read that email first thing in the morning, would that kind of take me off my game for this interview? Yes or yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. So why do I have to read an email first thing in the morning? In fact, the one thing that I can't predict is what I'm going to get in email, so I'm not going to. I'm not going to read it. I'm going to let it go till about 9. My day starts earlier, actually. I'll tell you what I do in the beginning. And I'll check email when I get off the phone, and then I'll check it again around 3 p.m. That's it. The rest of the day, it's assembly line theory where I'm just focused in to be in flow. Now, the most important thing before email, if you want to be more productive, is have a power hour. A power hour. What kind of hour, please, darling?
A power hour.
Thank you. And this is accelerated learning, so thank you for playing with me because it sticks when you say it again. You can do the same thing with me. I'll do it louder. And the key to this is to do something productive, not dealing with another human being. Doing it just with yourself. No email, no distractions, no phone, no voicemail, nothing. You get 1 hour of productivity down an hour before you start checking email or voicemail or mail or anything, right? You come in your office and you just get one out of the way. And it's not even an hour, it's 50 minutes. And so after you're done, you take a 10-minute break, because you should. It's very intense. And then you go into email. So email should not be checked in the morning, first thing. Do you check email in the first thing in the morning, Darlene?
No, you know what? I have a worse habit. I check Facebook.
Oh, okay. Well, I forgot about Facebook. So Facebook, Twitter, if you do it first thing in the morning, it's going to take you off, not on your terms, but on everyone else's terms. And you're going to be part of the soup, mm-hmm. kind of in a storm, treading water until you drown. It may not be now, but it could be possibly 3 years from now. Add years to your life. People deserve to have you around. Check mm-hmm. email an hour after you're in the office, Twitter, and Facebook. And then you can go in and see with the morbid curiosity of what people are saying about you or anything else in the world. That includes news. So a power hour before, and then email, you got the tips. 50 words or less, one thought, narrow, like 26 characters per line, and check it twice a day, once after your power hour and once again mid-afternoon, and that's it. And watch what happens with your productivity. Is that fair?
Oh, this is perfect. I love this. Thank you.
Okay. All right, great. Now, here's what's going to take courage, and I don't want to take your mind's going to take you out on this. Your mind literally is going to say, Darlene, okay, he's a nice guy, he's smart, but he's absolutely out of his mind with this one, so just to ignore what he's saying, okay? That's what's going to happen. You ready?
Okay.
Here's what you do with the 9,000 emails you got. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. It's false security, first of all. It's only causing more stress. Any email that's over 30 days old, is mm-hmm. a dinosaur. It's a dinosaur. It doesn't belong there. In fact, any email over 5 days, total dinosaur. If someone needed something, they're going to email it to you. So there are other ways of communication, such as phone, right? What mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't have email. I didn't have an email account in 1998. I used the phone. So if you go down, now today is, I'm looking at February 4th. It's my wife's birthday. So she turns a certain age. It's great. Yay. She gets
tell
to
her
we
said happy birthday.
I certainly will. I certainly will. Now, I want you to go back to January 3rd. January 3rd, about 31 days. And I want you to take your email and do it, you know, sort it by date and go all the way down to January 3rd. So the top one is the most recent, and it goes down to that 9,000th one, which is probably 2006 somewhere. And then I want you to hold the shift button and take it from that 31st day, which is January 3rd, and take it all the way to the bottom, and then delete it.
I knew that was coming.
Well, no, here's why. Because that is just their window dressing anyway. You might as well delete it because it's just they're reminding you that that you're not productive. It's eating away, needling away, kind of like a voodoo doll, your self-esteem. Mm-hmm. So those emails are worthless to begin with. Those people would have called you or you would have followed up on it. Those projects are dinosaurs. Have the courage to say no, because Warren Buffett, you know, taught me that it's your no list that's more important than your yes list, because mm-hmm. if you have a big no list, you make room for the yes. It's like pruning a tree. Why do you prune it? You kill a few branches so that a tree can grow more. It's all totally natural. So that's what I would do. Now, you're not going to do that, I know. So, you know, don't do it. But I want you to do it, and when you have the courage to do it, you'll call and say, ah, it worked. Okay? Next thing is change your email address, because you get way too many emails, and because you're on some spam list. Put it on an autoresponder and say, I've changed my email address, and I have a private email address now. If you'd like to get it, please call me, and we'll give it to you. And what's cool about that is the people who call you, you'll be shocked. It's not 9,000 different people. It's about 50. It's about 50 people. So change your email address so you stop getting that spam. A lot of worthless tension and stress-building messages coming. You do those two things, you'll be breathing more freely, more clearly. It's almost like you got some body work done, like Rolfing. You know, it's like, oh, I can breathe now. Well, but
that's
I know
perfect.
You're not going to do that because that's way, way, way too harsh. And, you know, I'm
going to happen. It could happen. Stay.
It could.
You know, I'll keep you posted because I've got to digest it and I've got to figure it out. And you know what? I respect your advice and your opinion. There's a reason why you're saying that, and there's probably something, you know, very beneficial in that process. And you know, our time as entrepreneurs, especially when we're wrapped up in taking care of so much stuff all at once, especially taking care of the family and the home life and things that you're used to doing, you know, if Alex Mendozian says to delete all your emails older than 30 days. That's probably a good thing to do.
Well, it just prompts longer living, and people who love you deserve to have you around. Stress takes away years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking years. I mean, let's say every time you look at your email box, you've taken maybe 5 minutes off of your life because of the stress it's caused. Okay? Let's just say it does. I know it does, but let's just say it did, even if you didn't believe it. Well, if you do that day in and day out, then, you know, after maybe 10 years, you know, you got two less years to live. I love living. Why should stress take me out? Or, you know, why shouldn't I not be happy with my family, especially with my kids still at home before the Martians have taken them at age 13, right? I want to be as happy as I can be to those years so that when the Martians bring them back at 21, then, you know, I can welcome them back with open arms. So that's email. For meetings, you ready for meetings?
Mm-hmm.
All right, productivity for meetings, very simple. Start on time, end on time, and plan it 5 minutes. Have a little 5-minute planning session so that you have the agenda. That's how you have a productive meeting. Most people wing meetings, and if it takes more than 5 minutes, 300 seconds to plan a meeting, the meeting is too long. Now, here's some other tips. Start a meeting 5 minutes after the top of the hour. Why? Because many times meetings go from, let's say, if you're in the morning, 9 to 10. And then you got another meeting at 10 to 11. Well, what about the travel time, right? But if you started at 10:05 or 10:10, or I like 10:07, then you have time to get there, and one meeting's not going to clash to the other, especially if you're on the phone and I have people going into voicemail. Now I've got to waste time checking voicemail to see who that was because I couldn't get off the phone with someone else. So start the meetings past the top of the hour. That's a great, great tip. It works wonderfully. You'll add more years to your life, less stress, and you'll become more productive, maximum results in minimum time, and more leverage, maximum productivity with minimum effort. And plan the meeting beforehand, usually a day before, and if it takes more than 5 minutes to plan a meeting, then that meeting is going to be way too long. I believe in 50-minute meetings. I believe in daily huddles. I meet with my president of my company 15 minutes every day in the morning, 7:05 a.m. Boom, we're off the phone at 7:20. So that's meetings. Any questions or comments on that?
No, that's perfect. I like that too. Great idea.
Biggest problem with meetings, biggest single problem, is they don't start on time and they never end on time. Probably the second biggest problem that I didn't even mention, and if we drill a little deeper to the core, is, you know, the reason why a movie, if we go see a movie, the reason that's so interesting is because there's tension. You know, like an Alfred Hitchcock film, or a love story, or adventure, or even a comedy, there's tension there. And there's usually conflict. That's what makes a great movie, protagonist, antagonist. A great story is that. Well, in meetings, most people don't like to have conflict, which is a reason why not to have a meeting. Seek to go into meetings with constructive conflict so that you can ease that tension and get stuff done. Call the elephants out that are in that room. Define reality as well as possible and compassionately communicate, but just make sure that you're defining reality. And by doing so, you protect your confidence and everyone else's, and you actually get stuff done because tension causes progress. If you look at the way nature works, think about it. Whether it's a cloud burst of rain, or if it's a geyser coming out of the air or a volcano exploding, tension of any kind, natural or unnatural, causes, you know, progress. Even if you burp, that is progress, okay? You don't have a bellyache anymore. Look at nature and you'll see that tension and conflict is a good thing. So those are meetings. So far, so good?
We're doing good.
Projects. What's a project? Well, a project is something that is possible that requires more than one action step. And David Allen really had a lot of impact on me with projects because, you know, anything that takes more than one action, we define that as a project, and he defines that as a project as well. Now, here's what I know about projects. If I look at a project as one thing, like this glop, then it doesn't inspire me, doesn't motivate me. But if I chunk it down and I break it down into parts and I delegate portions to people who I know can expand and even do a better job in that area of the project than I can, and they play it to things that I have to work at, and I play it to things that they have to work at, then really I'm outsourcing my weakness to them. We'll get to outsourcing in a moment. And I'm taking on their weakness so that we're just strengthening strengths. You don't want to strengthen weaknesses. You'll have a lot of strong weaknesses that way. So with a project, you know, the first question you want to ask is, okay, what is the project? The second question is, how long do I think it'll take? Now, how long is chunked down into three different steps. I learned this from my good friend Raymond Aron. And that is, what's the minimum time I think it'll take? What is the target amount of time it'll take? And what's the maximum time I think it'll take? So it's a range between minimum and maximum. So a project can take, let's say, 7 days minimum and 14 days maximum. And let's say the target is 10 days. Okay? So that's what we're looking at. So that we know where we're at as we're going. So far, so good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then as the project moves forward, we want to manage by objective. We want to manage by objective. And Peter Drucker taught me this before he passed on. You know, I got a chance to talk to him. And his MBO concept, which is where I learned it, managing by objective, when you have a project, anyone who's assigned to you, you want to have them send you an email with three things. It's one idea and three things. Number one, results I got. Number two, challenges I faced. And number three, questions I have. And I was taught this by a friend named Evan Pagan, who's a good friend of mine. He's in the internet marketing space. And I tweaked it a bit to work for me. But anytime I have a new hire or anytime I give a part of a project to someone else, I have them write an email to me before 5 p.m. Pacific, results I got, and usually just one. I just want the biggest result they got. Number two, challenges I faced. I want to know the challenges they had. I want to know what conflict they faced. And then number three, questions I have. And that way I can at least answer one question a day. Now, if you run a project that way, you just have gone to heaven without the inconvenience of dying, because you will be on task. You will know who's doing what. And when you got these tasks that you're doing, these objectives, you know what the meetings are about. You know, we talked about meetings before. A meeting is nothing more than, hey, did you meet the objective? Yes. Tell me about it. Did you meet the objective? No. Why not? That's all it is. Mm-hmm. There's an objective, yes or no. That's it. No fancy, let's brainstorm or what's our logo going to look like. What's our logo going to look like? That's a four-hour meeting right there. That's not for a meeting. You manage by objective. And make sure that the objectives are chunked down in your projects. Okay, that's the third area of productivity for maximum performance. Are we good so far?
We're great.
Okay, I told you I'd spend less time because email is the biggie. Phone calls.
This is a big one for me.
here's the biggie, and it may require some courage. Remember, that door can be opened from the inside, so it's an inner game thing with your mind. So. Mm-hmm. And your mind will take you out every single time, as my friend Harv Eker says, because you're a human being. You want to feel loved. You want to belong to something. So when you get a call, and it's important, if you're on another project, if you may pick that call up because you want to see what's happening, or maybe you think that there's a fire you got to put out. Well, a fire is not going to be irreparable if you just wait 15 more minutes to complete the task you're on. It's an interruption, and now you're multitasking. And when you do that, that is just almost certain that you're going to live a few fewer years on Earth, because it's the stress that's going to catch up to you, right? So when you look at the phone calls that you take, my question is, why don't we change the phone calls so that they're not at they're not controlling us, the phone calls, but we are in control of the phone. That's why you have a phone and an answering machine, so you have control of when you want to talk to someone. So the first thing is you want to compartmentalize. Compartmentalize. It's a kind of a complicated word, but very simple. What's the word, please?
Compartmentalize.
Thank you. It's like the quarantine, to put like in a section of your day, to chunk it in a section of your day. So if you need to make some prospecting, if you want to receive calls from prospects, let's say, and they take up a lot of time. The only people that take up more time than prospects are customers, because they feel like they have this entitlement. Like, oh, I paid you, so you need to spend a lot of time with me. Okay, you got to let them know up front that a lot of the questions can be answered on the frequently asked questions page that you may have, or it doesn't have to happen on the phone. That's or we have a 24-hour recorded message that we can do. So what I do is I take people who want to do business with me. They can call within a certain time range. And it's a three-hour time range, three times a week. And if it's a call that is prospecting, I won't take it unless it's within that time range, because I want to be like an assembly line. What's the word?
Assembly line.
Assembly line. That's why cars are not $50,000 for a Yugo. You know, a Yugo could cost $50,000. You know, it could, or Saturn could, but because of the assembly line, it doesn't. Right. And I bet, and you know why? Because a Rolls Royce is handmade. There's no assembly line for Rolls Royce. And look, it's a couple hundred thousand dollars, as is a Maserati or a Lamborghini. But the assembly line is what lowers the cost, and time-wise, as well as the cost emotionally of putting this thing together. So I bet you a lot more Rolls Royce engineers are stressing out whether the window is going to fall apart than someone is putting together, you know, a Ford Bronco, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the stress level, you know, is a lot less. When you compartmentalize. So that's the first thing I do. So if you call my number, it'll say, hey, it's Alex Mondosian. And look, if we've never met, and this is the first time you're calling, please call within these hours. Okay? You can leave a message, but I'm only going to call you back within those hours. So now I'm already in assembly line. The second thing is, if they leave a message, tell them to tell you what they're calling about specifically. That way you dive right into it. So I call you up. I go, hey, darling, how's it going? Hey, look, let's forget about small talk. Tell me about this interview. Shall I send you the questions? Yes or no? Boom. Mm-hmm. You go, well, wait a minute. What just happened? You just got a call from me because I'm hanging up. I'm going to the next person. Do I admire you? Do I like you? Are you a friend? Yeah. And I still have a lot of others I have to get to. Okay, we can have the chit-chat after business hours. Are you with me?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then another thing is, when you call, you say, look, I only have 10 minutes, okay, so let's dive right into it. That's a great way to start the call. Or if it's going on and on and on and on and on and on and on, did I say on? On and on and on and on and on and wait, on some more? On and on and on. I can't even get a word in, right? Then you say, excuse me, look, I got 2 minutes left. Can we focus on this one thing? Okay, it takes courage. What's the word, please?
Courage.
Courage. And self-esteem. And it's not easy. You can have all the self-esteem in the world, but in this one part of your life, you may not have the confidence because you're talking to someone who you've been wanting to get to forever, and they won't stop talking. And those people are the ones who talk the most anyway. So those are the ways that you handle phone calls. There's so many more ways, but these are very practical ways. And then finally, outsourcing. Outsourcing. When you want to outsource something, remember one thing for productivity. You ask them, have you ever done this specific task before? Have you ever been in this situation before? That's what you ask them. Situation. Have you ever been in this situation? So let me give you an example. We have a big house, right? And there's no way my wife and I could clean it in a week. Impossible, right? Big house. So we need cleaners, and the house cleaners come in for 8 hours. They're here, right? And so when I was, I'm the marketing guy, so I was going to hire house cleaners. So I used what Toyota has used over the years and has worked in many establishments. It's called the STAR method. The STAR method. It's an acronym. The STAR. What's the word, please?
STAR.
STAR. S-T-A-R. Situation, task, action, result. Situation, task, action, result. Now, the only way you can predict human behavior and future performance is by past performance. And I know we have 5 minutes left, so this is only going to take three. So if you're worrying, don't worry.
Oh, no, we're good.
Okay, good. Thank you. So When I was hiring our house cleaners, I said, okay, I'm looking for someone who's been in a situation or someone of a house of 4,000 square feet or more. Our house is about 20% bigger than that. And we have a four-car garage that half of it we can turn it into a gym. And the gym also has like a playroom in it and a Wii and all that kind of stuff with a flat-screen TV. So that's the messiest room in the house, right? And so if someone says, no, I've never done 4,000 square foot house before, then guess what? They're gone. I don't even want to continue talking. I'm going to outsource something to you you've never done. I can't do it. You're not going to pioneer on my back or my wife's back because my wife works hard. So situation is just that. 4,000 square foot or more house, you haven't? Oh, okay. Goodbye. Oh, you have? You have? You've done that? Great. Tell me about it. And then they tell me. Okay, then I say, okay, now here's the task. I need you to clean it one time a week, and you got to get out in 8 hours because we don't want you here at night. Okay, one time a week, not twice, one time a week. Have you ever cleaned a 4,000-plus square foot house in 8 hours one time a week? No, we usually do 2 4-hour shifts. Goodbye. Bye. That's not the task I'm looking for. Yeah, but I know I can learn to do it. No, you cannot. You haven't done it. Your body doesn't know that. You don't have the habit. You're not going to do it. We're not going to like each other after 30 days. You're gone now. Goodbye. I'm cutting bait. See what I'm saying? Now, let's say they say, yeah, I've done it. You go, great. So you have 4,000 square foot house that you've been doing, and you can do it in less than 8 hours. That's wonderful. One time. Perfect. Perfect. But I have to bring in my partner. Great. No problem. I don't care. Okay, just do it less than 8 hours. The money's not the issue for me as much as it is out of the house so that I can walk around in my underwear like I like to, okay? Third thing, and I'm serious. Third thing.
Now, Alex, you got me in a visual.
Actually, yeah, well, I mean, that's, it's just more comfortable.
I'm paying attention, would you?
It's just more comfortable. Third is action. Do you do laundry? No, we don't do laundry. Well, goodbye. But wait a minute, I did 4,000 square foot house, and I've been, I do it in one 8-hour day. Sorry, you don't do laundry. But I know how to do laundry. I do laundry for me. Yeah, but you don't do laundry for others. Okay? Have you ever held a snotty hand kid of someone else? That's not the same thing as holding your own child's snotty hand. Okay? So dirty laundry for someone else is not the same as dirty laundry of your own. So I'm sorry, you're not going to pioneer. Go out, do it, and then come back. And I went from 150 applicants down to about 6. And then here's the kicker. Result, 400-plus square foot house. You do it in one day, 8 hours or less with a tandem partner or whatever. You do laundry, and here's the result. And these are just, I'm asking them to tell me about it. But here's the STAR, situation, task, action, result. Do you fold the laundry and put it back in the drawer? Have you ever done that before? No. I do it at my house, but not at others. Goodbye. Adios. Avidazane. Ta-ta. What do you mean? I'm like part of 150 applicants. I'm down to the final 5. How can you let me go now? It's because you've never done it before, madam. And you're not going to do it for the first time with me because you're going to resent me and hold me in contempt after 30 days, which is only 4 weeks. So don't tell me you know what you're doing because I know that if you don't have a result, I can't predict that you're going to do it with me. I'm not pioneering with you. And I'm paying you top dollar, and I am. Because I why not? Because I'm buying experience. I get two people who say, yeah, of course we fold it. In fact, we'll even look at your drawers beforehand to make sure that, this is your sock and not your son's sock, and this is your underwear, not your, your wife's underwear, not your daughter's underwear. I go, great, great, you're hired. You're hired. Guess what? They've been with me for 4 years. Why? The STAR method, outsourcing, STAR, situation, task, action, result. And there you have it. If you take advantage of what we've just talked about, you will live longer, you will live happier, and you will get and take back control of your life. That is why we are speaking today.
This is phenomenal. And, I know we're right at the end of our show, but I'd like to keep going if you're okay, because you had mentioned interviews if we had time. Could you spend 2 minutes maybe with me on interviewing, since that's what I've been doing every day, day in, day out? I would love to have just a couple of tips from you on that if you've got a few seconds.
Absolutely. So let's take a specific type of interview. And let's take author, an author. Is that fair? Now, interviewing
sure.
an author. Are you good with that?
Absolutely.
So let's take a look at this type of species of human being called an author. Everyone who has a book in their heart should put it, you know, into a book. Anyone listening right now, if everyone is an author. Okay, I have friends who are national bestsellers, and they wrote their first book just because, you know, they thought that it would be a good thing for their legacy. That's what a book is for. You don't have to be a Chicken Soup for the Soul author. You don't have to write a 600-page manual like Top Grading that my good friend Brad Smart did and changed the corporation with Jack Welch and with GE and Larry Bossidy with Honeywell. You don't have to do that. You can just write a little book. And so let's say that you're going to be interviewed by someone. Now, whether you're an interviewer or an interviewee, I'm going to give you the questions that I think are the most meaningful for an author. Are you ready, Darlene?
I am ready.
Okay. What specific incident, what's the word, please?
Incident
inspired you to start writing this book? What specific incident inspired you to start writing this book? Well, here's an answer I got. I was on a plane, and it was a 747. I was sitting in first class, and, you know, I didn't want to really talk to anyone. I was thinking, what if I could write down some success principles that I've learned over the years, like take 100% responsibility of your life, or lean into everything that you do, or forgive others and move on and make amends, or, you know, what if I could do that? Well, it was a long trip. I was going, you know, cross country, so I figured in the 5 hours, let me write as many success principles as I can think of and just brainstorm. And so by the time I landed, I had over 220 success principles. I kind of like this idea. So I took that and I chunked it down to 64. And of these 64, I started writing about them. And I put them in a big white book. And that book is called The Success Principles by Jack Canfield.
Wow.
So that's a specific incident. Isn't that a great question?
Absolutely. Love
yeah.
it.
So you want to get them to where they were, what they were thinking, who was surrounding them. Were they weeping? What happened? It's so amazing that once you finally figure out what the specific incident was, then you get back to the inspiration that you've long forgotten in writing the book, which made that book matter. And that's why that question is so important. Get the author back into that space, and then they're ready for the next question. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who was this book written for specifically? Who? I know it was written for humans, but which type of human being? A stay-at-home mom, okay? Someone who's challenged with drug abuse or a divorced dad. Who specifically, if you could say that is the person I'm writing to, who would that be? Now, just look at what the author's situation is, and you'll probably find out who it was written to because that author wrote the book to them. See, it's not in giving we receive. It's not, in giving, we don't receive. In receiving, we give. First, we give to ourselves, self-love, a hug to ourselves, and then we can give to someone else. But we have these, you know, chronic givers, give, overcare, and then they're bad receivers because they're not in the habit. They're not in the habit of giving themselves. But the good entrepreneurs, the ones that have this nice cyclical pattern going, they give first to themselves, then they give away because they've just filled their own tank. So the book was written for them, not for someone else. And they just wanted to get that book out so people could talk about it in ink because pale ink is better than a photographic memory. So the second question is, who specifically was this book written for? And you'll see whether or not they're in alignment because if they say anyone other than themselves, then you know that they're in out of alignment. Are you with me so
mm-hmm.
far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the third question is, what do you want the reader to do? First thing, what action do you want the reader to take after reading the first chapter? In other words, not when they're done a week from now or 2 days from now. After the first chapter, what do you want them to specifically do? The author says, I don't know. You say, well, if you did know, let's pretend. What do you want them to do? That's an action. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the fourth question is, after reading this book, what would someone's life look like 30, 60, and 90 days afterward? What do you hope? What's the brighter or bigger, brighter future that you want to have for the person reading the book? That's the brightness of the future question. So those four questions, as you know, you start, an interview, really get to the point where you have nectar, you have the author in the right space, and now, kind of like an Oprah Winfrey or Barbara Walters, and now you're ready to go in deeper into specific chapters. You don't dive in right away, but ask those four questions. And that makes a productive interview. And you can rearrange those questions so that they're for just about anyone, like Donald Trump. What specific incident inspired you to start building buildings? Well, it was my dad, you know, I'm not going to go into it. But
right.
That's it.
Wow. Alex, this is incredible. I'm blown away by everything that you've shared with us in this interview, and I'm so grateful that you took time out of your day for this. I really am. And, you know, I hope our audience that's listening to our rebroadcast, because, again, you know, those of you that were listening to the live show, obviously the show ended a few minutes ago, but this recorded piece will still be available for people to tune into and listen. And, you know, tell us, Alex, the best place. It's alexmendozian.com would be, I assume, how you want people to reconnect with you.
Actually, even my Facebook fan page would be easier, because when you go there, you can participate with the community, which is a community of productive entrepreneurs. So just go to beproductive.com.
Beproductive.com.
Yeah.
Got it. That's perfect. And again, thank you so much for being here with us and being a part of the Accomplished Radio Show. I'm thrilled to be able to feature you in the next issue of Accomplished Magazine, and hope that we'll have a chance to reconnect. And again, be a part of some of our future shows. I would love to have you back on. And, you know, before we wrap up today, is there anything else that you might want to share with us?
Sure. I mean, I'd love to reconnect in person. I throw an event which is not a for-profit event. It's called the Marketing Mastermind Reunion. Every year, my students get together in San Francisco, California, in March. And it's like the birthday present to myself, because I love to teach. It's a day and a half event. If you'd like to come, or anyone listening like to come, it's very, very inexpensive to attend, and any excess proceeds goes to the Oakland Children's Hospital, which helped save my daughter's life recently. And so that's called MarketingMastermindReunion.com. MarketingMastermindReunion.com. And if you go there, you're more than welcome to attend. I hope that you come, Darlene, and we see you there.
Yeah. You know, I'll be going out for, well, the U.S. Small Business Conference is going to be in San Francisco this year.
Awesome.
So, you know, of course, I'm organizing and planning all of those things that's coming up. So when exactly is your event?
It's March 11th and 12th, March 11th and 12th. And the full story is at the MarketingMastermindReunion.com. So it's an amazing event, because the people there are of the David Allen caliber, the people in the audience. So it's almost like a TED conference for marketers. And,
ooh, I like that.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. And any one of those people sitting could be on stage. So that's one additional thing that I would impart to you, because that's a good excuse for you and I to meet up. And then you could probably meet a few people in the audience who could be guests in the future, or maybe joint venture with them.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Alex. This was awesome. I'm so glad that we had a chance to be together, and I'm grateful for everything that you've shared with us. This was fantastic.
You. Well, if you catch my mom ever, make sure you tell her the same thing, okay?
I will. All right. Well, we'll be in touch and connecting with you again very soon, and I look forward to meeting you in person again.
Thank you.
Hopefully at your event, and again, this is just a fabulous time together. So I'm sure we'll be in touch again.
Thank you. All good wishes.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. For those of you listening to our show today, you can hear us again replayed at AccomplishedMagazine.com. And we're just incredibly grateful to have Alex Mendozian join us for our show. And really grateful that everybody stayed with us for our extended broadcast. Again, this is Darlene Willman with the Accomplished Magazine and Radio Show, wishing you a lifetime of accomplishment.